was actually a friend who told me that my being in a wheelchair wasn't a mistake and that I wasn't a mistake. And when I heard that, and I'm sure I heard that message at various points throughout my life, but for some reason when she said it, it really resonated with me. And I was able to take that and really feel it and think, okay, well, I'm not a mistake. Well, if I'm not a mistake, then there must be a reason, a higher reason why I am here and why I was put in a wheelchair. So for me, realizing that, and instead of trying to pretend I wasn't in a wheelchair, and instead embrace that and use that as, you know, a clue as to what my purpose was, that opened the whole door, the whole purpose for me.
Hello, my name is Wing, and welcome to A Work in Purpose, the podcast for you to hear inspiring stories of how people have found their purpose in life and their insights and tips on how you can find your purpose too. Our guest this episode, Sarah Manuel, was not supposed to live past the age of 4 after being diagnosed with the number one genetic killer of children under age 2. She not only survived, she thrived. Despite being wheelchair bound and the low expectations so many people imposed upon her, Sarah found ways to overcome debilitating self-victimhood stories and instead chose to thrive in every area of life. Nowadays, Sarah is a school psychologist and an advocate for the needs of students with unique learning abilities. She's also the author of the book called Differences Are Dynamite, which teaches children to embrace each other's differences. She also coaches those with disabilities to gain the tools and strategies they need to embrace their uniqueness and discover their own entry points to their passions. If you are trying to get unstuck from your own disadvantaged circumstances, or if you find yourself trapped inside a victimhood story about yourself, and instead you are ready to ignite your purpose and live out your full potential, then stay tuned for this inspiring episode of A Work in Purpose with Sarah Manuel. Hello, Sarah Manuel. Welcome to A Work in Purpose podcast. I'm so excited to have you on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be here. I love talking about purpose, so I am in the right place.
Awesome. So nowadays, you are a school psychologist, a coach who helps people to find their purpose, especially people with disabilities, and even wrote a book called Differences Are Dynamic. But before we get into what you're doing today, I think it's important for the listeners to have some more context about you. So you were born with the number one genetic killer of children under 2. Can you share what was the diagnosis that you had?
Yeah, so I have spinal muscular atrophy, which is one of the 40 muscular dystrophy diseases. So like a typical person, to build muscle, you have to break it down and build it back up. For me, when my muscle's broken down, it's hard, if not impossible, for it to build back up. So I just work on maintaining what I have.
Because of that diagnosis, growing up, what was that like for you? And what were some of the beliefs you had about yourself because of it?
Well, as a result of the diagnosis, I lived my life in a wheelchair. And things are I'm very weak. So like a pound of weight is heavy for me. And also it's progressive, meaning that I'm stronger today than I will be in 5 years or so. You know, sometimes I don't notice the difference, but I know that it does progress. So when I was growing up, I grew up in a very small town, a small farming community. There were only 35 people in my high school graduating class, to give you an idea of what small is. And I was the only one in a wheelchair. And I was able to pretend that I wasn't in a wheelchair because I didn't have any like visual reminders of it. I was able to find my entry point and participate in all the things the other kids did, partly because we were so small, we needed all the people as, you know, to participate as possible to make anything happen. And also because the community knew me. And they knew my family. My family has been there for generations. So it was easy to kind of be folded into the typical everyday life of a kid growing up at that time.
That's great to hear. And what were some of the beliefs you had about yourself growing up, knowing that, you know, you required a wheelchair and other children didn't have to?
Well, I knew I didn't like to be different, because when we would go somewhere like to the city and we would see other people with disabilities, I'd feel very uncomfortable around them because it was like looking in a mirror, and I couldn't deny my difference when I saw somebody else with a difference. It was like reflecting right back at me. So I knew I didn't like being different. And as I got older, as my friends started to be able to drive and they were more mobile, it was harder to kind of keep up and fit in and do the things that they were doing at that point. So it got to be really almost not depressing, but frustrating, because I, in my mind, I was like everybody else. Like I totally believed that there was no difference. Like it would even be to the point, like when I would call to make reservations somewhere, I wouldn't ask if it was wheelchair accessible. And my parents would say, well, okay, so is it accessible? I'm like, I don't know. And I'd have to call again. So I was really, really good at denying and being just in disbelief of my reality, because there was no one else like me around to remind me of my circumstances.
Interesting. So in your mind, you were just like everyone else, but in reality, there were a lot of things that weren't quite accessible to you. So mm-hmm. What were some of the expectations you had about yourself and your surrounding, your family? What were their expectations of you growing up?
Well, I think some of the expectations, well, for me, I was going to have the typical life. You know, after high school, I was going to go to college, I was going to get married, I was going to have kids, I was going to have a career. Like there was no, like, I was not going to deviate from that plan. I don't think that my family had the same expectations. I think that they thought that I would be living at home with them forever and that they would have to take care of me, and kind of, cause they were like figuring out, you know, medical insurance and who would take care of me if something happened, you know, to them. And that was so not going to happen in my mind. And I wasn't really even aware that they were doing it. So yeah, there were definitely different expectations between what I thought my future would look like and what my parents thought my future would look like.
Wow. So how did you develop that strong mindset growing up if your environment was telling you this story that you can't do so many things and you would have to need so many additional resources, and yet you thrive from that? What would you attribute that to?
So I remember when I was growing up, my parents, my dad in particular, would tell me, can't means you don't want to. And it's not like he was shaming me for the things I physically couldn't do. It was almost like a challenge where if I wanted to do something badly enough, I was going to need to use problem solving skills and creative thinking to figure out how I was going to make it happen. And I don't even know if he realized what he was doing at the time. And I didn't realize it until just recently, thinking back, how I think that just gave me, you know, what I needed to just kind of figure things out, to not see things as an obstacle, to see that instead as something to work through and to solve.
Can you give me like an early example of something that happened where you were like, oh yeah, I can do this?
So I think, well, when I was about, you know, fourth, fifth grade, I became aware of like big, like Ivy League schools, like Harvard or whatever. And my parents were like, oh, well, that's all the way on the other side of the country. That might be really hard, but Stanford is close to you because I'm in California. So maybe have that as something to work toward. So like I shifted that expectation, like, okay, I don't have to go across the country to have a good school to go to. I can do that, you know, and still be relatively close to home. So it was just something like that kind of thing where I just kind of shifted my perspective, even just slightly, and it opened up massive doors for me. Now, I didn't end up going to Stanford, but I did apply, and it was something that I worked toward, you know, and it was always something that seemed like a real possibility for me. So that was, it was encouraging and just like I said, another way to look at things slightly differently, to make something that seemed impossible possible.
That's great to hear. So it sounds like growing up in your mind, you didn't really have like a victimhood story about your, you know, circumstances, would you say? Or maybe there were instances of that.
Yeah, I don't know that I felt like a victim. I think that my denial really helped me to steer away from that idea. But there was a period of time, like in my 20s, even after college graduation, when I was like, I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm floundering. I'm not living up to my potential or my expectations. And maybe it's just this wheelchair thing. Maybe it's just making things too hard for me. So it does come up into play sometimes. Like there are days when I'm just having a pity party for myself. It's like, this would be so much easier if I wasn't in a wheelchair. Like, it'd be so nice to just pick up something that I dropped on the floor, that kind of thing. But then I'm able to fairly quickly snap out of it and move on and deal with what's happening and problem solving.
So what were some of the techniques that you used to snap out of it that really worked for you?
Well, I remember, like, I figured out that I was telling myself stories that I didn't need to tell myself. So when I went to college, because it was the first time in such a big environment for me, like I noticed a lot of people staring at me. And it was like, I've gone into cities before and had experienced it, but I always came home and, you know, kind of had a reprieve. But at college, it was day after day after day, and it was really starting to bother me. And then I decided to tell myself, oh, they're looking at me because I'm beautiful, not because I'm in a wheelchair. And I started to believe it. And then as a result, my confidence grew. And maybe at that point, they were looking at me for other reasons other than the fact that I was in a wheelchair. But I realized that it started with the story I was telling myself and the narrative I was telling myself. And if I could change that, then I could change everything.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. It's all about your mindset, right? And the stories you tell yourself. I mean, what is reality and what isn't, right? It's all in your mind and your perception,
Absolutely.
Would you say?
It's all a matter of perspective. And if you can shift that even slightly, your mind is amazing. It can do amazing, amazing things.
So I want to ask you, so when people have a victimhood narrative about themselves, they often don't recognize it because it becomes second nature and like an identity. So how did you kind of recognize that you were having these victimhood stories and made the conscious decision to rewrite it?
Yeah, so I think if I wasn't aware of it, like after I met the man who would be my husband, he would like call me out on some of it. And one example is when we were first starting to date, he's like, well, you can have kids. I'm like, I probably can't have kids. He's like, no, you can have kids. You're strong. You can have kids. And so instead of me kind of, you know, I was really upset about it at that point, like not because of what he said, but I just felt in my heart that I wouldn't be able to even consider getting pregnant. He's like, well, we'll go talk to the doctors. And so it took him to kind of, instead of like sitting there feeling sorry for myself, to go out and get information and to tackle it face on and to figure it out. And as it turned out, it took many years to get that question, you know, settled. And we actually did have a baby and I did really well during the pregnancy. So at first I was letting my mind limit myself and feeling sorry for myself because of it. And it was him calling it out, saying, why are you just assuming this is your reality when we don't know? So I think sometimes you need an outside person, someone close to you that you trust to kind of call you out on things. And like, why are you thinking that way? You don't need to think that way. What's the point of that? Let's do this instead.
Yeah. So it's important to have honest people to help you snap out of it.
Yeah.
Did you find that maybe growing up, you had some people who kind of fed into that story of victimhood and would maybe not encourage you to do what you wanted to do and kind of reinforce that. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I definitely experienced people assuming things because I was in a wheelchair. So when I was moving up to the middle school, it was a new principal. And the way that we did our science classes, because we were so small, they combined the seventh and eighth grade and split us by like a higher and lower group. And she assumed, without me realizing, that I would be in the lower group. So I went to class that day thinking, okay, well, the principal told me I'm supposed to be here. So this is where I'm supposed to be. And a few minutes later, one of my classmates came and said, what are you doing in here? Let's go. You're supposed to be in the other science class. So, because I was supposed to be in the higher science class. And I realized, like, oh, I think she probably assumed I would be in the lower class because I'm in a wheelchair. And I kind of use that as fuel. Like when I would go to college, like the first week, I would go to meet the professors in their office hours so they can meet me and talk to me and know that I wasn't, you know, given the seat out of pity, that I earned my place in their class, that I was capable of doing the work and I was up to their standards. Because to me, everybody thought that. Since I had that one person think that, I just extrapolated that to where, well, everybody's going to assume that I have lower cognitive ability because I'm in a wheelchair and I have to prove to them that's not the case.
Wow, that's inspiring. So in general, when you are with people who do kind of put you in that little box, would your instinct be to prove them wrong or to maybe cut them off? What worked better for you?
I think depending on the person, maybe a combination of both. I can kind of get a feel for the people who I can like just show them and they will accept it and be excited about it and accepting. And then there are the people where I could, you know, do cartwheels and they wouldn't be impressed. So you kind of have to figure out what type of person I'm dealing with and then go from there. And like with the people you work with, you don't have a choice. Like you have to work with them. So I just kind of put up with them as best as I can. The people that are never going to be happy, and move on and work with the people that do appreciate me and my talents.
And would you say nowadays consciously surround yourself with people who are encouraging and believing you? And I mean, in general, for listeners, would you say that is something that people should do in general to thrive and find and fulfill their full potential?
Absolutely. But I think within that, if again, you have people that are encouraging, that doesn't mean that they are yes people. It means that they're people that you have a good enough relationship with. And I'm talking about your inner circle, not like your acquaintances, the people that you become vulnerable with on a regular basis. For me, a healthy part of that type of relationship is the ability to call them out on their crap and they can call me out on mine. Because if you don't have that kind of a relationship, I don't really think that's like your inner circle. That may be like someone at arm's reach, but like for the really true people that are, you know, very close to you, that know the ins and outs of you and who you're going to rely on for the most support and the most support, then those people have to be willing to call you out and you can call them out also. I think that's part of a healthy relationship.
Yeah. Over the years, have you learned some sort of like communication techniques that helps people shift their mindset about you faster or more efficiently and effectively?
Well, yeah, it's kind of what I do. I have this whole course set up to where I teach people how to kind of change their mindset. And so like one good example is where, you know, when you're looking for purpose, because I was looking for purpose for many years and For me, I associate a purpose with what I wanted to do for my job. And that's not always the case, but for me, it was in that moment. I realized that once it was actually a friend who told me that my being in a wheelchair wasn't a mistake and that I wasn't a mistake. And when I heard that, and I'm sure I heard that message at various points throughout my life, but for some reason, when she said it, it really resonated with me. And I was able to take that and really feel it and think, okay, well, I'm not a mistake. Well, if I'm not a mistake, then there must be a reason, a higher reason why I am here and why I was put in a wheelchair. So for me, realizing that, and instead of trying to pretend I wasn't in a wheelchair, and instead embrace that and use that as, you know, a clue as to what my purpose was, that opened the whole door for the whole purpose for me. Because as soon as I stopped denying who I was and I realized that I was given this difference for a reason, I was able to kind of figure out what that reason was. And for me, my reason is that I'm able to work with kids and families with disabilities and advocate for them. And because that's what I do as a school psychologist. So I went from denying that part of myself and being uncomfortable around other people with disabilities to completely embracing myself and embracing other people with disabilities. That's what acceptance will do for you. And that's what mindset will do for you. So now I teach that to other people.
Wow. How old were you when you had this aha?
I was in my 20s. I was post undergraduate college, but not finding a way in the world. I was married, but just clueless as to what I was going to do when I grew up, even though I was grown up. Like there was something missing in these jobs I was getting were just really terrible jobs. And I knew they weren't like a career. They were just like a for now type of thing. And it took a few years to kind of make this whole process into, okay, well, now I'm going to go back to school and get my master's and pursue this.
So what was going on during your 20s? I mean, what were you doing to kind of get clarity about what you want to do in terms of your purpose? Was there, did you like journal or something?
I was reading a lot. I was making like vision boards I was doing anything I could do to kind of visualize and kind of see what I would want my life to be like. Because at that point, I was just clueless and I was looking for clues and I was using all sorts of different modalities, whether it was, you know, just using my brain, using the visual stuff to try to figure out my way. Because I think the brain works in lots of different ways and there's lots of different clues if we're willing to exercise the brain and to give it different exercises to try to kind of figure it out. So yeah, I was in lots of talking, I like to go on walks and just think. So that helps me. Lots of different things, just trying to find a clue and going with it. And I had a really good friend who is my maid of honor. And we would just spend hours talking about, you know, life and what this meant and what that meant. And I realized after the fact, like, oh, we were kind of counseling each other. Well, that was kind of fun. So that's when I started looking into, you know, working in the school as a counselor. And then I saw the school psychology and that just seemed like it was a good fit.
Interesting. I want to ask about your vision board. So yeah. How did you do it? Like, what was the style of the vision board and how did that help you?
Well, I first heard about vision boards when I was watching an Oprah show. So this dates me totally of how far back that goes. And I just decided I was going to go through and cut out pictures that spoke to me. And I didn't really know why. I wasn't going to like question it. I was trying to get my rational mind out of it as much as possible and just select pictures that like spoke to me in one way or another. And then I kind of put them together and I looked at it. It's like, oh, yeah. And then I thought, okay, well, what about this and what about that? So then I hand wrote in some other things in there. And one of those things was like author. And I had no idea how everything was going to come together. But, and I still have that vision board. I like framed it because to me, in order for a vision board to work, you need to see it on a regular basis. And I wanted to frame it to make it look pretty and to make it have a place of honor of sorts, hanging up on the wall. So, and I still have it hanging in my bedroom. It's like that, even though that was like 15 years ago or so, it still applies to me today. It's kind of evolved with me and with my life, because things that had one meaning back then have a totally different but still relevant meaning today.
Wow, that's amazing. So what else on the vision board came, turned into reality? So you became an author. What else was on it?
Yeah, well, I had a picture of a home, and we bought a house like 11 years ago. So that was done. A picture of a baby on there. Just like, and there's still things on there that we haven't done yet. Like I have travel on there, like, and we haven't done a whole lot of that yet. So that's still something that I want to do. And that is relevant. But then there's other things. I like words. So like fresh start is on there, and true love. And it wasn't like a true romantic love. It was a true love for myself. And I think that I definitely have that now. And it's growing every day. It's increasing every day. So
that's great to hear. So after you were talking with your friend, you decided to go into school psychology and counseling. And then you eventually, it sounds like you found your calling and your path to drive. And I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned something about an entry point. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what is an entry point and share more about how you recognize that to be one of yours when you were talking to that friend?
Yeah. So for me, an entry point, I mean, there are lots of things I wanted to do growing up to kind of, you know, do what the other kids were doing. And an example is when we got to junior high, like my classmates were starting to play sports. Well, I couldn't play volleyball, but I could keep score. So for me, I was able to participate and be part of the team. But yeah, I was able to do it in the capacity that I was capable of doing. So that's what I call finding my entry point. It's, we all have these pie in the sky ideas sometimes, and that absolute ultimate dream may not be in the works for you or in the cards, but you can do something that still fits that and feeds that passion. So I know there's a lot of people that want to, you know, might be like professional athletes or what have you. Well, maybe they're not going to the professional baseball league, but they can become coaches, or they can umpire, or they can do, you know, they can report, you know, be a sports reporter. There's lots of things you can do to where you're still in the environment. You're still feeding that passion, even if it looks a little bit different than what you originally had in mind.
Great. So going back to when you were talking to your friend and then deciding to be a school psychologist, what were some of like the first few, I guess, entry points that made you realize, yeah, this is exactly what I need to be doing, and which continue your fire? Can you share some stories of that?
Yeah, well, I realized that I liked working with kids. And I also realized that working in a school environment where, you know, you have extended breaks would be good for my body. And to give it rest because of my disease. I realized that I'm a good example for other people to not just kind of dismiss someone with a disability, and instead to, you know, to treat them with value and respect and as an actual person, and not as, you know, just a thing or something that you don't really think about in the same. Because I think like for a lot of people with disabilities, like you feel kind of forgotten. I feel invisible a lot of times. Like if I'm out and about, like a lot of times a waiter or waitress won't talk to me. They'll talk to my husband or whoever I happen to be with. So there's a lot of that, I think, in the disabled community where we, at least I feel very invisible at times. And if I could, you know, kind of show people through example that, you know, I am I am a worthy individual, even though I'm in a wheelchair, maybe because even more so because of it. And that you shouldn't treat me like I'm invisible. You should treat me like my husband calls me his Wonder Woman, you know, because I've been through so much. I have a warrior spirit because I have fought through so many, you know, medical issues, emotional issues, spiritual issues, and I'm here all the better for it. So I saw that, you know, I had this opportunity to serve this group of people and also to go back to where I was, where I grew up, and to teach the people that I grew up with and that knew me, but a different side of me. I just thought that was a wonderful opportunity and that it checked so many of the boxes I was looking for.
Nice. And then eventually you started speaking too, right? Publicly, and started coaching people individually. And then you wrote a book. How did all of that happen? Like, what were some of like the first few steps that made you want to be a public speaker to influence people?
Well, I think a speaker was one of the things I wrote on the vision board, and I had no idea what it even meant then. I just felt that was something that I needed to put on there. And as I was working as a school psychologist, one of the teachers I worked with in particular was like, I need you to speak at this event. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. And she's like, no, you're going to speak at this event because what you have to say is so important. So it was a lot of encouragement and then just kind of, you know, remembering like, oh yeah, this is what I'm here to do. This is part of my purpose, and stepping into that and embracing it kind of led to the speaking. And in terms of the children's book, Differences Are Dynamite, that came from assignment in my grad school toward the end of it. And I had been thinking about it and working on it off and on for like 13 years. And I was just finally like, nope, I'm going to get this done. So because it has an important message that I think people need to hear.
Nice. So you mentioned earlier that you had some sort of spiritual, what was the word you used? Not crisis, but there was something that you had to go through spiritually. I'm very curious to hear more about that. And what was the spiritual problem, and where are you at now in terms of that?
Yeah, well, I've always felt a spiritual pull. Like I've always believed in God and always believed that, you know, he does things for a reason. But it was after, when I was having that conversation with my friend, the reason why it all came up was because what I think I remember, because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't remember things the way they actually happened. But the memory I have was, you know, when I was like 3 or 4, so not long after I was diagnosed with my disability, I remember my parents taking me to like these healings, like, and because they just wanted me to walk and be a typical kid. And of course that didn't happen. That didn't work. And so I kind of always felt like, well, maybe, like I believed that God was there, but I don't know how much, like I didn't know how much he was actually listening or how much he was actually involved in my life. And then that's when my friend said, well, the reason those healings didn't work is because you weren't a mistake. There was nothing he needed to correct. You were made exactly like he wanted you to be made. And so it was just taking that and embracing that message. And now when I look back at those healings, I think, well, how do I know they didn't work? Because for somebody with my age, with my disability, I am incredibly strong, like physically strong for, you know, what I could, you know, I don't have feeding tubes. I don't use a breathing machine 24 hours a day. Like so many of the people with comparable age and my disease do. So I am so fortunate. And like, how do I know that those healings didn't work? Like he could have, you know, graced me at that moment to where, yes, I'm in a wheelchair, so it didn't fit the exact prayer that maybe my parents were praying, but maybe he answered the prayer in a different way, and we just don't know.
Yeah, so maybe It was more like a change in perception that was like the answer, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so I want to ask you, where would you say you're at on your journey towards your purpose now? Have you found it? Are you working towards it, living it, embodying it?
I think it's always going to be a work in progress, partly because I think that as we move on through life, our purpose changes, whether it's slightly or significantly. I think it's always evolving with us as we grow and evolve with it. So whereas like school psychology used to be, you know, it for me, now I'm feeling like, and I'm doing through my coaching and my online classes and that kind of thing, that I am fulfilling another part of my purpose. And that is to help other people accept who they are and use their differences to help identify their purpose. You know, because so many of the experts, when you're talking about purpose, they say, well, do what makes you happy. And to me, that's like the worst advice ever. Because, I mean, I think what we're looking for is joy and not happiness. Because happiness to me is like very short-lived. It's kind of a reaction to our circumstances. Like if somebody brings you flowers, that makes you happy. But the moment that your boss calls you into the office, that happiness kind of goes away because you have to deal with whatever the boss is talking to you about. But if you have joy and fulfillment, it doesn't matter if the boss calls you in or not, you still feel that joy and that fulfillment like constantly on a day-to-day basis. And it's not fleeting like happiness is.
Great.
Yeah. So I think if we can embrace who we are and change our perspective of our differences, because we all have differences. You know, mine happens to me, my wheelchair, among other things. But everybody has a difference, and it's not necessarily a physical difference. And if we can embrace those and just change our perspective of them and realize we were given those for a reason and to try to figure out what that reason is, I think that unlocks purpose.
Yeah. Oh, I love how you said it's a work in progress too, by the way.
Yeah.
That's why I call this podcast a work in purpose, because it is
Yes. Constantly
changing and in progress. It's a journey.
Yes.
So in order to know your purpose, like you have to know yourself, right? So mm-hmm. At what point did you really know yourself?
I think that's also a work in progress. Like I think that like in my 20s, like I really think that I came to accept myself, but I think there's still things about myself that I'm learning on a day-to-day basis. Like things that like I didn't think would bother me that end up do bothering me, or things that don't bother me that, oh, I thought that would really bother me. Because I think as we grow and evolve as people, we have to kind of, you know, I think who we are changes, and we have to get to know that side of ourselves that grows and evolves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did you first realize that, yeah, this is my purpose? Like looking back now, did you always have a feeling that what you're doing now is your purpose, or is it just something that you're realizing now, looking back?
There was when I was taking my grad school classes, and I was loving it. And I was just assuming that everyone else was too. And one of my classmates said, you know, not everybody loves it like you do. We're just trying to figure it out. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, maybe this is, you know, I'm loving it because I'm finding that fulfillment I was looking for. And how grateful am I that I'm feeling that joy from my classes? So I think it was that moment where, yeah, somebody just said, oh, well, you know, you're kind of the only one that's like loving this as much as you do. That kind of just shed a new perspective for me. It's like, oh, okay, I'm on the right track then.
Oh, that's great. Do you have any advice for those who are trying to figure out what their purpose is?
Yeah, I think stop looking to what makes you happy and start looking within and what makes you different or unique from everyone else. The thing that you are maybe embarrassed about or try to hide or downplay. So an example I love to use is, especially because I'm a school psychologist. So if you're a parent and your child is having a hard time reading, you think, oh my gosh, that's horrible. Like, we got to get this fixed. This isn't right. They're going to struggle all through their life if they don't know how to read. Well, then what if I told you that half of the rocket scientists at NASA have dyslexia, or 80% of the students at MIT have dyslexia? Because having that, because their brains are wired differently, yes, it makes them hard, makes it hard for them to learn to read, but they are totally capable of these amazing engineering feats that, you know, where would our world be if we didn't have NASA scientists and students at MIT? So just because you're not capable of doing what everyone else is able to do, doesn't mean that there isn't a gift in there. Or, you know, something to look at and be really proud and excited about. So that's what I mean when, you know, look at the things that you're downplaying or that you're hiding or you're ashamed about or embarrassed about, and see where the good is in that, because that is where your purpose is. It's just a matter of shifting your perspective about it.
Are there any specific exercises people can do on their own to figure out how they can turn their uniqueness, I mean, like a negative into a positive?
Yeah, well, I think the first one is kind of just doing that check with yourself. It's like, write down all the things that you're embarrassed about or ashamed about, the things you wish were different about you. And then, you know, next to that, try to find at least one good thing about each of those things. I think that is a great first place, a good way to start that journey, and really trying to embrace all parts of yourself, because there is no part of you that is a mistake.
I like that. Yeah, I guess for me, like, one of the things that came up was that I grew up with a minor speech impediment, right? So starting a podcast was something that was like, oh, causing me so much anxiety. But then I thought, but I'm a really good listener as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And so I formatted the podcast so where I ask a bunch of questions and just listen and let the guests speak. And I think that, I guess that would be an example of that, right?
Absolutely. And you're probably really good at observing things. Mm-hmm. Because you tend, like, the people that tend to be quieter, and I assume you're quieter because of that impediment, you probably pick up on things observationally that most people would just miss. Yeah. And that's because we don't even realize it, because we just think, oh, that's just me. Yeah, you know, I'm not good. You know, that's nothing special. That's just something I'm able to do. But, you know, something that's just, you know, every day to you is a magnificent gift to somebody else, because they can't do that.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks for pointing that out. So I want to ask you, for those who might have figured out what their purpose is, but they're, you know, not ready to step out of the comfort zone yet, what would you say they should do to take the first step to finally get there?
Well, I would challenge them to shift their perspective about, look at why they're afraid to get out of their comfort zone, and how can you tell your story to yourself differently? Because when we don't want to go out of our comfort zone, there's a reason for it, and there's a story that we're telling ourselves about that reason. So if you can craft a different story to tell yourself instead of the one that you always tell yourself on replay, right? We always play those negative things on automatic replay in our heads. If you can, instead of replaying the negative, if you can replay a positive new take on that story, I bet you it'll make it easier to get outside that comfort zone.
Yeah. What are some ways, though, that can really help you convince yourself that your positive story is, you know, legitimate, you know, because we can, like, come up with stories and then not really believe it and then go back to our negative story. So what can we do to really embody the positive story come up with?
Well, the way I embody the story about why people were staring at me is I just told it to myself over and over again. Like, whenever I felt that discomfort, I would just remind myself, okay, that's because they think I'm beautiful. Okay, that's why they're doing it. Not because I'm a freak, because they think I'm beautiful. And I would just constantly remind myself about it. and reassure myself that's why they're looking at me. It's not because I'm in a wheelchair. It's for this other really positive reason. And eventually, like, it's not going to work in a day or two, but eventually you will believe it and embody it.
Okay. So repetition is key. Do you have so you mentioned you have a vision board where you see it every day. Do you have other reminders of things that you have physically to remind yourself of these positive stories?
Yeah. Well, on my home screen on my phone, I have a saying that says things are always working out for me. And that's, I never change that. I know a lot of people change it for pictures or whatever. Mine always says that. And sometimes I'll just clear it so I can see it again instead of all the notices that come up, because I need that reminder that, you know, the crap may be hitting the fan right now, but things are always working out for me. So, and like I said, I like words. So I have little sayings everywhere. I have this thing where I nickname myself Superhero Sarah. And I say, okay, I'm calm, confident, and creative. So with those three characteristics, I can tackle any problem and solve it with that creative thinking, because I'm not going to freak out. I know I'm going to be able to do it, and it's just going to take a little creative problem solving to do it. Mm. So I have these visual reminders around everywhere.
Nice. So at what point, when does Superhero Sarah come out usually?
I have it, the little poster right next to my computer desk, because when I'm working is usually when I'm stressing out about something that comes up. And I look at that and okay, I can take a breath and just know that I have the tools to make this work or to solve this problem or to get beyond what's going on right now.
Awesome. So as we all know, 2020 was such a pivotal, life-changing year. I'm just curious, how did that year change you and shift your purpose potentially?
Well, it was a huge year for me. And I know people look back and it's oh, it was a terrible year. It's for me, it was such a positive year because I had such personal and professional growth in that year. So I had started working on this whole business and coaching 5 or 6 years ago, and I put it aside and I would think about it from time to time, but it was when the closure happened that I'm okay, now's the time. I'm going to do this. And I got my website redesigned and up, and I made all this happen. And it gave me so much time and freedom to be able to look at things outside the day-to-day, go to work, come home, eat dinner, go to bed, the routine that we all get into. So that was huge for me. And I took full advantage of the time. And I didn't realize until then how much of an introvert I really was. I really am. Because I don't know that I necessarily miss people all that much. Just because I'm kind of content being with my family and just hanging out and, But it was a lot of opportunity to really think about things and improve things for myself personally and make things happen in my business. So that was such a blessing in disguise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way. This podcast was a result of 2020. I wouldn't have started it if it didn't happen, and given the time to reflect on my own purpose. Yeah. So what do you do during the coaching? How do you help people find a purpose?
Well, I have online courses that people can take. I have one where I teach people to speak up for themselves called On No Doormat. I have one called Destination Tomorrow, which is all about the vision board thing.
Oh.
And I have one called The Purpose Discovery Blueprint, where we really go into looking at your differences and why you were blessed with those differences and how you can shift your perspective about them in order to really embrace them and use that as fuel to find your purpose. And then I'm also working on a mindset a course for people with disabilities called Don't Dismiss Your Ability, because I think for people with disabilities in particular, it's really easy to say, oh, well, I can't do anything, you know, because I'm disabled or whatever. It's like, no, there's so much you can do. It's all a matter of mindset and perspective. And I teach how to do that. How to not let your circumstances dictate your reality.
So do you find that, like, do you have a lot of clients who have disabilities, and do you find that they're more resistant with what you're teaching? And do you have any breakthrough stories that you can share?
Well, I think just because of society, people with disabilities they're more reluctant to look at what is a possibility for everyone else, and think that that could be their possibility too, their reality as well. Because I think one of the problems is there's not a lot of representation of people with disabilities in the media. So you don't see a movie where the lead happens to be in a wheelchair. If you see somebody in a movie that's in a wheelchair, they're either a very minor character or they're getting cured. And there's so much more to living life with a disability than, you know, just like, I am still a complete, whole, worthy person, even though I'm not cured. Like, my life has purpose and meaning, and it doesn't matter that I'm in a wheelchair. That's just part of my story. It doesn't dictate who I am. It doesn't make those those determinations for me. So I worked with a student several years ago who really struggled to learn. But she had these dreams, and she didn't know how she was going to go from making those dreams a reality. And we worked on just finding the inner strength within her, changing her perspective, changing the story she told herself, to where she went from, I can't do it, to, I think I might be able to do it, and I'm going to at least try. And now she has a professional career. She's married. She's flourishing in life. And it was all a matter of being willing to look at the way her reality, as she was telling herself, was, and what she could do to just make a few changes to completely alter her future for the better.
That's awesome. Great to hear that. Just had this random thought when you were talking about representation on the media. Like, I was thinking, yeah, there aren't that many people on wheelchairs. And then one of them came up in my mind. You know, Professor Xavier from X-Men?
No.
He's like the head of X-Men, and he's in a wheelchair. He has this super psychic power, and he opened up this school for mutants so they can like hone their skills and thrive and be flourishing members of society. I was just going to ask you, like, what do you think of Professor Xavier? But yeah, just had that random thought.
Yeah, well, we need more characters like him in all sorts of different genres. That would be awesome.
Yeah. So I think now I'd like to go into our lightning round. I'm just going to ask you a bunch of short rapid fire questions. You can answer them as long or as short as you want.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
What is one thing you like to do to relax?
I love to just hang out with my family. Like, my husband and I, we go for walks around our neighborhood. Sometimes when our son feels like it, he joins us. But yeah, we just like go for walks and we talk and we just hang out. We really like each other. Even after 20 years of marriage, like, we're still best friends. So yeah, they relax me for sure.
Great. That's awesome to hear. What is one thing you like to do for fun?
I love to go out and try new restaurants, which isn't, you know, something that we've been able to do a lot, you know, lately in the past year and a half. But yeah, I love to like just go to a little town and check out the, you know, the little shopping areas and find like these really cool restaurants.
Nice. What is one thing that makes you enthusiastic?
I think just life. And there's so much to seize and to discover, and I'm excited about life. I'm excited about my life. I'm excited about my future and the possibilities and where things could lead, you know, personally, professionally, like I love that we don't know what's going to happen. Like, we have our hopes and dreams. We don't know exactly, you know, how it's going to come down. And that's exciting to me.
Nice. And what is one habit you always do for a great day?
I read the Bible every morning.
Nice.
It just gets me in the right frame of mind to take on the day.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What is one habit you are working on?
My temper. Oh, yeah. I have a bad temper. I try to breathe. Like, my husband will call me on. It's like, okay. And if I'm not too mad in that moment, I can step back. But if I'm like really furious, it takes me a little bit. It's like, okay, I overreacted. I'm sorry.
Cool. What would you say is the most important lesson you've ever learned? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
The can't means you don't want to came to mind. Just find a way to make what you want to have happen, happen.
Mm, yeah, it's a great one. What is a book that changed your life?
Oh, I've read so many really good books. I like when people read, they usually are reading fiction. And like, no, I love nonfiction books. So the first one that came to mind was The Circle Maker. I read it a few years ago. And it's a spiritual book and just about, you know, God and his promises and that kind of thing. So I need to reread it for sure because it's been too long. But that one came to mind and I haven't thought about that book in a while. So there must be a reason why that one came to mind.
Yeah, I have to look into it. But what about that book made, like, how did that change your life?
Because I read it along with the friend who told me that I wasn't a mistake for when, and we would talk about it as we were reading it. And from what I can remember, I think it was like the first time I really realized that God had made these promises to us. And there was, you know, if we pray, you know, they can all come true. Like, we can see them realized in our life. So that's the impression that it left with me.
Mm, I see. Cool. If you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing?
Oh, I don't know. Probably still working a crappy job that I didn't like just to pay the bills. Because that was the path I was on before the school psychology. I was just going from one lousy job to the next. I'd probably still be on that path. So good thing I'm not there anymore.
Yeah. And how would you describe your ideal life?
It would look a lot like it does now, you know, with my husband, with my son, where we're happy. We are surrounded by family and friends that love and support us. We go out on little adventures on a regular basis, like to those little towns and find those little restaurants, that kind of thing. And just being in a state of gratitude for everything that we have.
Nice. Sounds amazing. And how do you define purpose?
Like I think we said earlier, I think purpose is evolving and it is what brings you fulfillment and joy in life. And it's what you were put on earth to do.
Mm.
So.
Great. And lastly, do you have any requests you would like our listeners to do?
Well, I would love for your listeners to really take what we talked about today and think about it, not just have it be something that they heard during this hour and then it's kind of out of thought, out of mind. I would love for them to think about it and see if anything really resonated with them and then to act on it, to not let it go in the moment. If something resonated, I would hope that they would really seize it and try to find a way to incorporate whatever that nugget was into their lives to make their lives better.
Mm, yes, great request. And where can people find you?
I'm at sarahmanuel.com. And then I'm at Instagram at SarahManuel35 and Facebook at ManuelSarah35.
Awesome. I'll be sure to include those links in the show notes. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being a part of a Work in Purpose podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun. I love talking about purpose, so you made my day.
Yay. I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Sarah Manuel and that you gain new tools and strategies that you can use to turn your perceived disadvantages into your unique gifts to the world. If you'd like to learn more about Sarah Manuel, you can check out the links in the show notes. If you'd like to support this podcast, please subscribe, tell your friends about it, and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And if you're new to this podcast, welcome! I encourage you to listen to our past episodes. May your present moment, now and forever, be filled with light, love, and joy. Until next time, this is Wing, and thank you for listening to A Work in Purpose.